You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sean Anikolabukuti, and you are locked in Rebel Radio. Keep it 100. Africa. Fuck you, Josh. I mean, really, fuck you.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. Today, we got a real rebel for you, all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Sean Kuti, son of the late Fela Kuti. Sean is an icon of African music around the world. He's the leader of the Egypt 80 band, which he is continuing his father's legacy and as well as creating his own. We get into deep conversation about politics and music and the connection between the two and global corruption and all kind of fun stuff. We might challenge some of you on this one. I'm excited to hear what you think. Let's get into it right now with Sean Kuti. What's up, man? It's great to meet you. I appreciate you making time. I know it's late out there, and I understand you're just getting home from a long tour.
Yeah, I've been home just a couple of days.
How was the tour?
Oh, it was fine, but quite long.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear what you're up to next and talk about this new project. I usually like to kind of start at the beginning, but obviously you have a very unique story. So if you don't mind, indulge me a couple questions. Well, I usually start by asking... Do you remember the first record that you ever bought for yourself?
That's simple. The first record I bought for myself was DMX's "It's Dark and Hell Is Hot."
Oh, nice!
That was like the first record I bought with my own money.
I love that record.
Yeah,
that's great. I mean, that's a great part. Great place to start a musical journey.
Musical journey didn't start with my first record, you know.
Yeah, of course.
My house was a musical house, so I was even getting musically trained, you know, but I couldn't go out and buy Mozart CDs in Lagos and stuff.
Of course. So, you know, it's really interesting. Most of the artists that I talk to have, I guess you would say, the luxury of starting out, figuring out who they are in... before they're famous, right? In obscurity. And your path was obviously very different because I know you started, you joined your father's band at 9, right?
Yeah. I've been working for a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you remember your first time on stage? How that felt?
Yeah, I do. I did. I remember my first show quite all right.
Where was it?
Was at the Shrine in Lagos.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a Friday night. And I remember it because after the show, I'll give you a bit of background. So during the rehearsals, I was just there doing my thing, dancing, jumping. But I was missing the cues. I wasn't getting the song right. So my dad came up and said, you have to watch the band so you can learn your cues. So I watched the band because of during the rehearsals to learn the cues. So when it was showtime, I did the same thing. I just faced the band throughout. So my dad came to me after the show and said, you got to face the audience, man. Something like that. So I remember that show.
Sure. That's amazing. And so then, as I understand, you end up taking over the band at 14, which obviously quite young.
I didn't take over. That sounds like a coup d'etat or something. As I said, I was already in the band, so we just kept playing. There was no like takeover or anything. We just lost fellas, so the dynamic changed. The band just decided to keep playing, and I was already in the band, so I didn't come and take over anything.
Okay, fair enough. I get it. So was there a point that you sort of developed your vision for where you wanted to take the band later on? How has that evolved?
It has never been personal for me, my relationship with the band or how we moved forward. I've always let the art and the music be the guide. The music takes the lead, and wherever it takes us to, we follow. I generally, honestly, I know this is hard to say, but I've never really had any personal ambitions about the Egypt 80.
Okay.
It has always been a collective mission for me.
Sure.
And I guess where I'm lucky to be comfortable with it is that the collective mission also aligns with my own life goal and my life's dream and mission. So it's a good place. It's a positive place for me to be, in that
sense.
How
would you define your life goal and mission?
To use all my skills and talents for the just aspirations of African people all over the world, and also for our national, for the development of my nation. This is my ultimate goal. This is why I do what I do.
Sure. Yeah, I love that. I think. Tell me about how the music and the politics sort of work together for you.
Everything is political. I don't think there's anything in this world that lies outside of politics. Mm-hmm. Politics even determines who you can fuck. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I really believe that people that say that they are not political with their art are the most political, because saying I'm not political is a very big political statement.
Yeah, that's fair.
You understand? Even saying that I am not political is political.
Yeah.
Many of the status quo artists, that tend to say, oh, no, they are the real politicians, because they are selling the status quo.
The people. Sure.
They are selling the narrative. What they don't want to say is politics by saying that they're not political. So I don't really think it's just music generally, to be honest. I think all human endeavors should be politicized, and people within be politicized as well. So we're no longer living in this vicious circle where we keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again because people continue to have the luxury of putting their head in the sand by the point I'm trying to make really though is, even if all the musicians in the world today decide to be political and make political music and try to change the world, if the engineers of the world are not willing to engineer a new world, then nothing will change. Mm-hmm. If the lawyers in the world are not willing to fight for a world where justice, you know, is paramount, then there's nothing we can do, neither. There's nothing the media can change. If the bankers do not operate for the well-being of the majority instead of the profit of a few, you know, all other industries are responsible for the advancement of humanity, not just art. And I think for some reason, musicians are just left carrying the ball every time. Oh, why are you not trying to change the world with your music? But then you leave the bankers and all these other people to go about destroying the world, you know, as they see fit, you know, putting pressures on musicians. Like, well, we should be asking, okay, how can banking change the world? We should be asking these people these questions too, you know. But for me, you know, definitely music can inspire the world to want to be different.
Yeah. You
know? But people must want a different world, you know, or else they will not key into the inspiration. It will not sound like it makes sense to them. They might even go as far as saying that you are crazy.
Hmm.
And then start calling crazy people normal, you know.
Sure. I think we see a lot of that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you're saying. I think, you know, as somebody that grew up, you know, with hip hop and with the sort of cultural change that came with that, you know, I've always thought of, you know, music has the ability to open people's eyes, because people, you know, young people especially, care what a musician has to say or will listen to the lyrics. They're not necessarily paying attention to what a banker's saying. And that's not to reduce the responsibility. But I guess what I'm saying is, I've always thought of music as a vehicle for bringing attention to these issues that maybe we need to learn about or prioritize.
Yeah, so is journalism, you know.
Sure.
I think it is more the job of the media to tell the people the truth than it is the job of the artist.
Fair enough.
And guess who's dropping the ball there? The journalists. So, yeah. I mean, as I said before, the musicians can only do so much. You know, in a world where journalists don't want a better world, bankers don't want a better world, everybody is aligning themselves with the status quo. You know, everybody's aligned themselves with their next paycheck. There's only so much positive music can do.
Of course.
Sometimes I actually do feel like I'm just screaming into the wind, you know? But at the same time, there's also a force within me that reignites my passion, you know? Mm. Every time I feel like that way, something inside of me tells me the reason why I need to keep going. You know, because if I'm going to go by the natural reality of the evidence, it seems like humanity is hell-bent on destroying itself.
Mm.
You know? So,
sure.
Especially the elites, you know, because they have all these bunkers they built under their houses. You know? They have all these fortified safe spaces. Mm-hmm. So they don't care. They think, well, if they destroy the world's ecosystem and they will hide in their bunker till everything settles down and they'll come out and repopulate the world with their own new, with their same oppressive ideology. Not understanding that, you know, staying in your bunker yourself with your family for 15 years, y'all will go crazy or kill yourselves before the apocalypse is done. You know, you need other people, you know.
Yeah.
But this is generally the selfishness and the myopic sentiment of the elites globally, you know, from Africa to Europe to America to Asia, they're all the same, you know.
Yeah. So when you're feeling, like you said, you're screaming into the wind, is there something you do to sort of reconnect with you know, your purpose, your mission? Does that just happen automatically, do you have a practice?
No, it happens automatically. You know, I think because I am completely vested in what I'm doing, and I believe also, you know, in the ultimate salvation of humanity, you know, being in the hands of the people themselves, you know. So I think from within me, you know, I can't really explain that, but from within me, I'm able to see a reason to keep going on. You know, probably my kid, probably my family, my wife, you know, I don't know, but as they say, you know, you have to really love something, to if you don't have if you don't have love in your life, then you have nothing to die for, right?
Yeah. So go back. We started talking about, you know, when you're younger, sort of starting out. Was there a point where you started to feel, you know, comfortable in that role? You know, where it's, you started to kind of hit your stride, or was there somebody you tuned to for guidance back then?
Oh, I had a lot of, I can't say I did it by myself. Like, you know, all these famous people like to lie to the world. I came up by myself, pulled myself up. The same elitist narrative, you know, that they tell everybody. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Sure.
Anyway,
yeah, that's bullshit.
We all have a huge network of support. To make it in this world, you need people that support you, even in the tiniest ways. Mm-hmm. You know, even those that listen to you when you moan and complain about how your music and career is not where you want it to be and all of that. All those things are relevant to your well-being, your sanity, you know, to your ability to function properly. The people that care for you. That, so for me, it has never been I wouldn't even say that right now I'm comfortable in my position, because I know that there's always something that we could do better. There's always a way to move forward, and I'm always trying to find those ways. You know, so there's no comfort, you know, if you're trying to, there's no comfort in the struggle. Let me put it that way. Immediately you start feeling comfortable, you know, you should reassess what's going on. You are dropping the ball somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I think, you know, we're in this moment, you know, globally, I think there's so much attention on mental health, which in some ways is great and it needs to be explored and talked about. And I think, but kind of what you're saying, there's also this this priority put on comfort and this sort of like unspoken or maybe spoken idea that we should all be comfortable at all times.
Yeah, but you know, what we are looking at here is not even comfort as is, because comfort is now also equated with luxury, which is kept away from the people.
Sure.
So humanity didn't evolve to work for comfort. Comfort has always been here.
Yeah.
It has always been accessible to all humanity. And when I say comfortable, I'm not even talking about sitting in my house or lying on your sofa, watching big screen in your nice. That's not the comfort I'm even talking. What I'm saying is, when you feel comfortable in your mind, like everything is okay, everything is fine, it means you are detaching yourself from the larger reality of humanity. You are removing yourself, because everything is nice for you and comfortable. You're like every, you know, but you are not everybody. So that's what I'm saying. Like, even at those moments where I think, oh man, I'm okay, I should relax, there's always something within me also that lets me realize and remember, you know, the world still needs work. The world still needs changing, and you are a part of that world. You know, and this is what is, how would I put it, dialectically different between people like me and people that run this world, you know.
Sure.
Is that they detach themselves from the people. They detach themselves from the majority. You know, their existence is their reality. They don't exist within reality. They make their existence their own reality. So their existing within their reality is within their existence, not the entirety of reality. You know, that's why people can be going around talking while, you know, 80% of the world is living in hunger, and people are talking about how the world is progressing, you know, and there's never been a time in human history when this much people were going hungry, you know. So, and not only that they are going hungry, that they have no means and no capacity to change the situation on their own. You know,
sure.
This is really sad.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I think at least in the West, you know, the narrative that people like to talk about is that things are getting better, right? Is that there's progress and
yes, because Elon Musk is getting richer, you know, so definitely things are getting better.
Absolutely.
Jeff Bezos is getting richer, so definitely things are getting better.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, nobody cares that, you know, the solar ice caps are melting and the whole seas of the world are polluted. Yep. You know, beyond anything that we can imagine. You know, nobody cares about the deforestation of the world. You know, as long as there's profit behind it, it's progress, you know. The disappearance of so many species from the wildlife, you know, the bee colony collapsing globally. Nobody's mm-hmm. even trying to answer that question. What's killing the bees, you know? So there are more children out of school today. You know, there are more people that cannot access healthcare, cannot access education. In your country, you know, it's just people piling debt upon debt just to get the basic amenities to survive.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I know it's easy to think we are progressing when you watch the hip-hop videos.
Sure.
That's why they love hip-hop.
Yeah,
they love this mainstream music. It makes them feel good about themselves. Look, the black people are happy. Look at them. They're twerking and drinking champagne. This world is great. Right.
Sure.
I mean, if black people can be having this much fun, we've solved the world. The world is fine.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to laugh. Yeah, no, I get it. So what... what do you think it's going to take for us as a culture globally to sort of wake up and take these issues seriously?
I don't know. I think we've missed this global opportunity. We've missed that with the 50s and the 60s. We missed that with the 70s. And I don't think it's going to come back again because now the elites of the world are talking about globalization also.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to realize that it was the workers that first went global. Mm-hmm. You know, the labor unions were the first to be global, to attach sure. working class people's struggle from all over the world, connecting the struggles and our situation, understanding that we are under the same class conscious war. You understand? And that class consciousness is what has eroded from the narrative of the working class today. The elites, through their ownership of the media and all institutions of influence, have been able to slowly, gradually, but effectively erode class consciousness from the people. So everybody thinks that they are a millionaire in waiting. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks that they can become the next Jeff Bezos, you know, not knowing that it's impossible. Even the World Bank has said that you stand a higher chance of winning the lottery than dying above the class you are born into.
Sure.
You have a higher chance of winning the lottery than dying above the class you are born into. So that means even they know that this everybody can make it is a myth. Mm-hmm. It's a lie.
Sure.
You know, even those that have made it need socialism to continue making it. What is the meaning of PPP loans? What is the meaning of bank bailouts? If that is not socialism for the rich,
sure.
You know, why is Elon Musk getting $10 billion to go to space? You know, you want to go to space, you can't go by yourself. You can't afford it. You're the richest man in the world. You still need to go and take $10 billion from the people, you know. But there's no $10 billion for education anywhere. There's no $10 billion for hospitals anywhere. You understand? So I think that is the mindset in general, you know, and this is, we as the people must stand up again. We must choose humanity. I think that is what the global people have to do, because you have to understand that the elites are global too now. They put aside some petty differences for them to have a stronger grasp. You know, so they are global. Americans own banks in Nigeria. Nigerians own banks in England. You understand, the Saudis own properties in LA and banks in LA and businesses. Americans own businesses in Ukraine, which is why they are fighting for Ukraine right now. You know, they're protecting business interests.
Sure.
You know, so these elites are completely global as well. They are highly organized. They're planning. So if we, the people, think that one protest on the streets or one of people is going to change this, then we're joking. If we do not organize on that level about our humanity and nature, if we are not organizing on that level and refusing the tokenism, you know, one of the things that I laugh at that, how would I put it? One of the things that disappoints me about the working class in Europe and America is how willing they are, how quickly they are willing to sell the other working class people all over the world down the river as soon as they are promised some incentives. Oh, lower gas prices. Oh, minimum wage rise. Oh, free housing, free healthcare. Oh, yeah, go to Iraq, go to Vietnam, you know.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, real backlash against that. Those governments are allowed to continue. These policies are allowed to continue against the global working class. So this global camaraderie itself is being defeated among the working class people while the global camaraderie of the elite is waxing stronger to our own detriment, you know. So I think generally, Europe and American working class needs to put this, their racial bias aside and get with the class conscious battle, the struggle, you know.
Sure.
I feel that the class struggle is the ultimate battle of humanity, where the working class and poor people of this world can come back and take the power of production, not just political power, but the power and means of production, so that everything that is from the earth can be for the earth, you know, not just for some individuals. Because how long are we going to do this where we are all suffering just so that Jeff Bezos can buy a new yacht and dismantle bridges in Netherlands? You know, I mean, I don't get it. What? Why are we? Why are they accumulating this wealth? If there was some kind of noble goal behind it, we are accumulating this to build. But there's nothing. It's just wanton consumerism and oppression, you know, and creating scarcity, more and more scarcity for the world. So I feel that to defeat that, we need to definitely organize ourselves better globally as well, you know, and most especially not accept tokenism. You know, we must always advocate for real change.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I think even even locally, we're people are incredibly easy to divide. Right. And even, you know, even in the U.S., you mentioned the labor unions, you know, there's a big chunk of poor people in the United States that are anti-union, right? Because they've been co-opted or bought out or, you know, they've been sold a story that, And so I think, there's a hopefulness in what you're saying. That that those are possible, and I think, you know, I'm curious what you see out there that kind of gives you hope that keeps you going on this mission.
Oh well, my daughter is my number one reason, you know.
Yep. Sure.
Definitely. Since I've had her, she has made me understand very well the perspective that I'm supposed to. How would I put it? That I'm supposed to head into, rather. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. So, I mean, definitely, you know, we want a better world for those that are coming behind us.
Sure.
You know. I mean, I think that there's nothing, I don't have any other reason for doing what I do. Except that I want to leave this world a better place than I made it.
Love that. Well, let's talk about music a little bit. So I know you have this African Dreams project with Black Thought.
Lines from Henry Dumas and cautionary tales witnessed with my own two eyes. A few guys can serve two
guys. The difference is a subtle nuance. How'd that come about?
Oh,
how'd you connect with him?
That, Oh, I met him in 2019, just during the Grammys week, you know, when I was in LA. And we kind of hit it off, and we've always kept in touch, you know. And so during the pandemic, the producer of the project, Molotov, well, I call him Alex, because that's his real name, and we were friends in uni. You know, we went to uni together.
Okay.
Alex and I were flatmates, you know. So he had this, he was working on with my record, you know. Mm-hmm. He was working on some of my songs, and he sent them to me. And coincidentally, I was talking to Black Thought when he sent them. So we're like, what do you think of these ideas, man? I've just been fucking around with your last record. And I think we could do a cool remix. So he sent me the song, and I'm like, listen, this thing, this music is hot. Nice. But, you know, since it's also kind of like hip-hop influenced, let me talk to Black Thought. And if he's down, then we could really, this could be something that we could really work on. And as soon as I sent him the music, he was like, let's do this. You know, but it was during the pandemic, so everything was digital, transfers and stuff like that. But yeah, that was how we were able to make it work.
Nice.
You know, it was spontaneous. It was something that we did from a place of love for music and things like that. It was not, it wasn't like a gimmick or plan,
sure,
you know, or A&R influenced. No, this was two artists and a great producer agreeing that they should do something just because of the strength and the beauty of what was presented. You know, so I really thank Black Thought a lot, because we did all this. He was really, really helpful. He gave us guidance. He opened doors, you know, and here we are today about to release the EP.
Nice. What is it, just the two of you on the EP? Do you have other
For this one, yeah, for this one. But we have another surprise project coming. But I can't give away too much. Stop asking.
All right. We'll watch for it. So tell me about, you've had a lot of great collaborators. I know you've worked with Robert Glasper, with Brian Eno, Carlos Santana, so many great people. What do you look for in a collaborator, and sort of what makes a good collaboration for you?
I'm always looking for people that are musically, I think, in a way, how do I put it, that I musically respect. I think that's the most, I respect your musicianship. That is the criteria.
Sure.
Because these days, there are more, as like T-Pain said, there are more artists in the world today than Cheers. So, and the word artist and musician is thrown around so loosely these days, you know, that a dog could be called a musician if he howls right. If he howls on the right beat.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that's a musician right there. That's hot.
I mean, if not, you can just sample it and auto-tune it and it'll be fine.
Exactly. You know, some of these artists, actually, even with the auto-tune, they sound like dogs just howling. But that's another story for another day.
Sure.
So I think, but personally for me, it's always about the, how do I put it, the musicianship. Because my music is, my sound is quite, how do I put it, musical, you know, melodies, chords. So for me to really have an artist on there, I want him to be able to bring, you know, some to the sound, you know. So, yeah, that's how I choose my collaborators. And even if it's going to be rappers, you know, I want real poets, people that are grounded in human ideologies. I don't like consumerism narrative on my records. I don't like people, you know, talking about demeaning women or violence. You know, so I pick my artists based on ideology as well. So musicianship and ideology matters to me. You know.
Yeah. Love it. What about, I mean, it seems like music coming out of Africa is maybe bigger than it's ever been, at least in terms of what's hitting the U.S.
Yeah.
What's your take on what's happening in African music? What excites you, and what are you hoping to see more of?
the Egypt 80 band excites me. You know, I'm one that minds my business. And I'm not a big okay. fan of music as well. You know, I'm a musician, but yeah. I don't really listen to music a lot. You know, I have to say, I'm not a listener. You know, like if you come to my house, you could be in my house the whole day and I don't play a single song.
Is that right?
You know, except maybe my guests want to listen to something and they go play the player or something. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'm reading. If I'm not reading, I'm watching some, you know.
Okay.
And also it's because I'm always working on songs of my own. And when I'm writing a song, I don't want to listen to other people's songs because I don't want any unwanted influence to creep in, you know, because music can do that. You know, you don't even know, you're just recognizing something you heard last week.
Yeah, of course.
You know, yeah, so.
I mean, how could you not?
Yeah, so for me, those are the two main things that matters. Music.
Nice. When you think about the future of Egypt 80, what excites you the most?
The not knowing part of it. You know, I think, you know, just like Europeans do with religion and predicting where we are from and where we are going to. Oh, you were created by God and you're going to heaven or hell when you know. Sure. Humanity, we have to accept some things. Mm-hmm. The future is a mystery. You have to accept that. You know, all this, oh, I'm going to plan, planning for my future. I'm thinking, listen, the future is a complete mystery.
Sure.
You know, so I tend not to interfere with mystery, you know, because the mysterious is more powerful than all of us. We should observe and respect it from a distance, not try to control it and dominate it like Western scientism wants to do with everything. And I said scientism, not science. You know, yes, it's true. Yeah. The politicization of science as the only means to knowledge. You know, sure. Ignoring every other method that have existed before. You know, I don't believe in that because that's scientism. You know, and just the way they tell, oh, you know, from mystery we have come, and to mystery we shall return. You know, and that for me is a very big. It was a line I read in 2000 seasons. I think, yeah, that's it. 2000 seasons by Amrakwe, the Ghanaian author that lives in. Yeah. So he said that in the book. And that has always stood out to me, you know. And I've let that line influence me as much as I can let it, because it's the ultimate truth for me. That we are from mystery, and to mystery we shall return. This for me means I do not have to worry myself about those things I cannot control or are beyond me. I must have the humility and the intelligence also to be like, okay, that is beyond me, and I respect it that it is beyond me, and I will act accordingly. I will not look for any ways or anything to try and be above that is above me. You know, like even when people try to explain, like this whole heaven or hell thing, is a real insult on humanity and the process of life itself, that people want to tell us what we do not know. We have to believe what we do not know. We all know we do not know. And I think that there's a beauty in not knowing, you know, but science doesn't allow that. Science says you must know everything, you know, and look at where that has gotten us.
Sure. You know,
an ecosystem collapsing on itself, even though humanity has all the wealth and the resources and the technological know-how to prevent that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something in maybe in human nature that makes us so uncomfortable not knowing.
No, it's not human nature. I think it is the nature of the capitalist elites that have come to conquer the world. You know, we have to realize that a few men and this greedy ideology who are able to amass some armies to impose their beliefs on us. I always tell people, like, you think you accept these things to the point of belief, but you do not really believe in them. And I know you don't believe in them because I know you will not give your life up for them. You know?
Sure.
So we just accept these things because of the promise of being able to accept the luxury that they control, because that is really the gun that is put on everybody's head. The luxury that they control. And their ability to deny people access to it, even though it belongs to everybody. You understand? So this is their main power. This is how they're able to get the musicians to sing along. This is how they're able to get the journalists to write along. This is how they're able to get the doctors to dance along and all these things, because, you know, they are able to offer them luxury and comfort, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the truth of it.
Sure.
You know, and this is just because this, and I don't think we believe in it. We have to be bought for anybody to function in this system and act accordingly as the elite one. They have to buy you. There's nobody they work for that is working with them from the love of their heart. Like, oh, I love this guy and I believe in his dream and that's why I'm here. No, everybody's working because they're getting paid. You know,
sure.
Nobody, we don't believe in them, and that's the truth. And we're just, I think, for some reason, also because we are all used to our logs, our comfort, you know, zone, yeah, and our little luxurious cars and our chains and our designer clothes and our jet trips. We don't want to rock the table. We are afraid, you know. Mm-hmm. So people are afraid of people like me who are like, man, fuck all of that. Let's bring this whole thing down.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I think at the core of it, you know, and also as it has taken only a few men to create this system that we live under, mm-hmm, I also think that it's going to take only a few men to change it, you know. So that's what is going to happen. Just the way it took Che Guevara, only 50, he crossed into Cuba with only 58 revolutionaries from Mexico, mm-hmm, you know. Not the whole of the Cuban nation was behind him,
sure, you know.
Same for the French Revolution. Same for the Russian Revolution. In fact, Lenin was in exile. He didn't believe the revolution could happen in Russia anymore. He was outside of Russia when the revolution started. He had to fly and rush back to Russia to start to politicize the mob.
Hmm.
You understand? So I believe that, you know, as I said, you know, the future is a mystery. Who knows what it holds? But in what it holds, hopefully, there are a few men, few women, few children, few people, and even the abstract power of nature must be behind something that would change this world. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, because something's got to give.
I love it, man. That's a powerful thought to wrap up on.
My pleasure, man. Being on your show.
Nice. Well, I have a quick lightning round, a couple questions I like to wrap up on.
All right.
I know you've been all over the world. What's your favorite city to travel to?
Ooh, traveling back home.
Yeah,
I think the exciting trip will be back home. I'm nice. Telling you.
Who's your favorite DJ?
Oh, well, I have to say DJ Molotov. Remember, I have to say DJ Molotov.
Nice. fair enough. What I know you mentioned that book just a moment ago. What's the last great book you've read?
Oh, I'm reading. I just finished reading a really amazing book, and it's called White Malice. Oh, I wish I could show you the video by Suzanne Williams.
Okay,
and it's the CIA and the covert recolonization of Africa.
Mm.
Incredible book. Incredible. Yeah. Book. I thought I knew how the CIA worked, you know. I thought I knew what this world was about. You know, sure. You think you know until you realize you don't know.
Incredible.
Oh, man.
I'm going to check that out. What movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
Oh, wow. Easy. Godfather.
That's great.
Part 2, which is my favorite one.
For sure. The best.
Absolutely. It's an amazing film. I really do love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's someone you've never met, but you've learned a lot from?
Noam Chomsky, David Attenborough.
Yeah, brilliant, both of them. Yeah. And last question.
I was close to meeting Noam Chomsky, but then the pandemic happened and couldn't reschedule the meeting in Boston. So, but I'll try again when I know I'm going to Boston again, I'll try and hit him up. I hope he still remembers.
I'm sure he will.
All these books.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question. If I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Man, I hate this shit.
Okay. I mean, that's an understandable emotion.
Yeah, I mean, people that work for me kind of say that. I'm a good boss, you know.
Okay.
But I'm tough. But I'm tough because, you know, we got to be perfect all the time. Ain't no half-stepping, you know.
I love it. I love it. Well, man, thank you for making time for this conversation. I've enjoyed all of it. Really appreciate it. And I'm definitely watching for the next project and everything beyond.
Thank you, bro.
Yo, that was Sean Kuti on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you check out the African Dreams Project. I think you're going to love it. Leave us a comment on this one. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And most importantly, next week, come back for more Rebel Radio. Peace.